You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous. At this time, we ask that you turn off all cell phones. Unless, of course, you're using them to listen to this podcast, in which case, please keep it on. And please refrain from any flash photography, as it is dangerous to the performers of this podcast. And now, sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
Don't you see? It's so simple. Step one, we Google the biggest flops on Broadway. Step two, we find the crazy stories behind them. Step three, we see how they lose millions of dollars.
Millions?
Broadway isn't cheap. A lot of fancy people want to be producers. Step four, find out why the show won't go on. Step five, end this episode and head to Times Square.
Times Square? That'll never work. Only Broadway successes are in Times Square.
Oh, ye of little faith. Welcome!
I thought I'd try a different welcome today.
Hey, Theater Geeks!
Hello! This is Pamela.
And this is Ebony.
Welcome to Theater Geeks Anonymous, where we talk about Broadway flops, scandals, and new works.
Who fails, who sues, we tell their stories.
We are gonna tell it!
Oh, guys. Oh, how'd your week go? You went on vacay.
I was on vacation.
A little break from the city.
Oh, it was amazing. Gulf Shores, Alabama. this is really telling. My parents like to go to the Hangout Music Festival, it happens in Gulf Shores every year, but it's relatively new. I think it's just like 8 years old or something like that. But my dad and mom have been going every single year. And then like they'll add family members here and there each year, but every year they'll rent a beach house and they'll go to the music festival over the weekend. And then the rest of the time we'll just hang out. But like I'll send them off to the music festival and I'll wrap myself up in all of these, you know, different layers of sun protection and go out on the beach and read. It is so relaxing and lovely. I just love it there.
That's awesome. That sounds very nice.
It was nice. So if I talk like this, that's because I'm really relaxed. What's the show we're going to talk about today, Ebony?
Oh, today we are going to talk about a gangster musical.
What? Well, is it Bullets Over Broadway?
It is not Bullets Over Broadway.
Oh, is it Guys and Dolls?
It's not Guys and Dolls because that was a hit.
That's very true. I was just trying to think of all the gangster musicals. Yeah. Oh, is it Bonnie and Clyde?
It is not Bonnie and Clyde.
Well.
All right. So today's musical is called Legs Diamond.
Legs Diamond.
The musical. that's what it's called.
Awesome.
So, Legs Diamond, the musical, was a passion project for Peter Allen. And some of you will know Peter Allen because you will know Hugh Jackman.
Yeah.
Who did, was it a one-man musical? Or was it?
Which show?
When he did, what's it called?
Not The Boy from Oz.
Yeah, The Boy from Oz was all about Peter Allen's life.
Right. It's not a one-man musical. Okay. There are other characters in it, but yes. I mean, it did, I mean, really, honestly, it kind of played that way because nobody told us about the show itself. They just said Hugh Jackman was in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, The Boy from Oz, which was the show that Hugh Jackman did a few years ago, was based on Peter Allen's life. And Peter Allen was Australian, but he was sort of like New York's Liberace. Like, he was very
flamboyant.
Very flamboyant, shiny, sparkly. Mm-hmm. He did concerts mostly. He wasn't known for being in a musical.
Okay.
The Legs Diamond musical was going to be his first, like, foray into an actual, like, Broadway show.
Cool.
So what had happened is he had seen this movie from the 1960s about Legs Diamond. And I'll just give you a little backstory. So the musical is also known as the Totally Fictitious Musical History of Legs Diamond. So if you can imagine with me, you're in a Broadway theater and some shiny sparkly lights come down and it says Legs Diamond. I mean, like, bright, shiny, colorful lights. And then underneath that, a whole nother set of lights and letters come down and it says the Totally Fictitious Musical History of Legs Diamond.
It's like I'm there.
Yeah. And if you would like to do this to yourself, which I did, there is an extremely bootleg version that you can watch on YouTube. Guys, it's so bootleg, somebody's head's in the way. It's grainy, yeah. And you can see, like, it's VHS. I mean, this is some old school stuff.
Like, reel to reel.
It's painful. That's amazing. But I did it. And, I mean, you can... Here's the thing is you can kind of make out humans. Okay. Like, all the white people are kind of white, shiny, colorful blobs. And all the black people are like darkness. And then you can see a costume moving. So you figure.
That must be a person.
That's a person in there.
Okay.
It's very interesting.
Awesome.
Okay. So the Legs Diamond musical used the film The Rise and Fall of Legs Diamond from 1960 for its source material. The demise of the musical we're going to speak about is also the origin story of the Times Square Church. So we'll talk about both of those today.
Cool.
Legs Diamond was a real bootlegger gangster from the Prohibition era who worked mainly in Philadelphia and New York City. His first name was Jack, right? So it's Jack Legs Diamond. He was born John Thomas Diamond in July of 1897.
Did he have gorgeous legs?
Well, we'll get into how he got the nickname Legs Diamond. Okay. But as a child, he was just John Thomas Diamond, okay. Which is a cool last name, right?
Yeah.
So Jack had a younger brother named Eddie Diamond. And Jack and Eddie both struggled through grade school. And their mother, Sarah, suffered a lot of health issues. And then in December of 1913, she passed away from complications due to high fever and bacterial infection. So John Diamond Sr., their father, moved them to Brooklyn shortly after.
How old were they?
If he was born in 1897 and she died in 1913 and they left a few months later... math.
Let me just get my calculator. Okay,
because math.
97, so 3 years. So yeah. 10. He was 10. that was really fast for me.
Good job.
Thank you.
Because I'm not.
I do musical theater.
I mean, this is like simple math, too. And I'm like, no, I can't. His father was an Irish immigrant. And so they moved to Brooklyn from Philadelphia.
Okay.
That's where they moved to. Okay, so.
To Brooklyn from Philly.
Diamond soon joined a New York street gang called the Hudson Dusters. Diamond's first arrest for burglary occurred when he broke into a jewelry store in February of 1914. So he was about 11 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And he's already been arrested.
Legs. I know your mother died, but. Behave yourself.
Okay, wait. Wait, cut. Because it's saying here when he was 17. February 4th, 1914, he was 17.
When was he born?
It says 1897. I think we might have done some... Did we...
Somebody, 1897 to 1913 is 10 years.
And then four to 1914 is 11.
Wait. It's 16 years.
Okay. 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 I was like, so either they did bad math or we did bad math.
We did
so
bad math.
So it turns out we did bad math.
Okay. Sorry, everybody. So when I told you that I'm musical theater and not a mathematician, that is because I don't do math well. So he was not 10. He was 16.
16. Okay.
Sorry. Continue your story.
So he was 16 at his first arrest. He was 16 when they moved. And then at 17, he had his first arrest for... jewelry theft.
Okay.
Diamond served in the U.S. Army during World War I, but deserted in 1918 or 1919. They're not sure of which year. And was then convicted and jailed for desertion.
How long?
Let's see. It was only a few months.
Oh, okay.
Because the next thing is once he got free from jail, he became a thug and later a personal bodyguard for Arnold Rothstein. And... that happened in 1919.
Okay.
So he was only in jail a few months for desertion.
Wow.
So in October of 1927, Diamond tried to stop the murder of little Augie. His name was Jacob Organ. As Organ and Diamond were walking down a street on the Lower East Side, three young men approached them and started shooting. Organ was fatally wounded, and Diamond was shot 2 times below the heart. Diamond was taken to Bellevue Hospital, where he eventually recovered. So this is very important because one of the sort of legends surrounding Legs Diamond is that, you know, he had like 9 lives like a cat. It was like impossible to kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is the first time that he almost died.
Wow.
So this just like continues throughout his life.
Yeah.
The police interviewed Diamond in the hospital, but he refused to identify any suspects, and the police initially suspected that Diamond was an accomplice and charged him with homicide, but the charge was later dropped. Jack Diamond was also known as Gentleman Jack. Diamond survived a number of attempts on his life, as I just said, and it was between the years of 1916 and 1931, causing him to be known as the Clay Pigeon of the Underworld. His nickname, Legs, either came from the swiftness with which he created crimes. I think I was supposed to say he, like, fled or escaped them.
Okay.
Or evaded? Evaded. Or his ability to be a great dancer.
It's so, one or the other.
But apparently, like, he really was a good dancer.
Oh.
Like, this is, like, a real thing.
Okay.
If you watch the movie, you'll see, like, it's a huge part of the movie.
Oh, how fun.
But
that, I mean, honestly, that leads itself to be a fantastic musical.
Well, I mean, you would think, in a way, like, you would say, you know, this man had this talent, you know, for, but I saw the movie and I thought, I hate this person.
Well, he's a thug.
Right, but I feel like I have seen other shows, case in point, Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like I listened to it because I didn't have the pleasure of being able to see the musical, mm-hmm. but I listened to it and I still felt for them.
Yeah.
You know, I felt for them constantly getting into trouble. Like, even when I saw Bonnie and Clyde, the movie, mm-hmm. you know, the one with Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, and you're just like...
You kind of want them to succeed, right, even though they're doing horrible
right.
things.
Or not, like, you know that this isn't actually what they want to be doing.
Right.
Especially Bonnie. Like, yeah. That's not what she wanted to be doing. She wanted to be famous and mm-hmm. go to Hollywood.
Yeah.
But they were poor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had no money. And, you know, it was also during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So there's, you have to have some sympathy for a character in order to sit with them for 2.5 hours.
Absolutely.
There's got to be something in them that is redeemable enough or that you can connect with. Mm-hmm. And I just sat there and I was like, no, you're just Satan. And that's all.
Yep.
So then In December, we'll go back to the story. Diamond was also a womanizer, and he was best known. His best known mistress was a showgirl and dancer named Marion Kiki Roberts.
Call me Kiki.
The public loved Diamond. He was upstate New York's biggest celebrity at the time. So he was all over New York, just not New York City. Or not only New York City, sorry. And Philadelphia. December 1931, Diamond had been staying in a rooming house in Albany, New York, while on trial in Troy, New York, on kidnapping charges.
Oh, my.
On December 17th, Diamond was acquitted. That night, Diamond, his family, and friends were at a restaurant at 1 a.m., Diamond went to visit his mistress, Marion Kiki Roberts. At 4:30 a.m., Diamond went back to the rooming house and passed out on his bed. Two gunmen entered his room around an hour later. One man held down Diamond while the other shot him three times in the back of the head.
Oh my goodness!
So, as I stated before...
Was this his second life?
No, this was it. This was the end. Okay. This was it. So, that was the thing, was there had been multiple attempts on his life. Yeah. And
like this time they were like, you know, we're doing it for real this time.
They weren't messing around.
Sheesh.
So, speculation as to who may have killed Legs, they thought maybe local politicians may have gotten together to get rid of him in order to prove they had a handle on the city and no one would disrupt the image they were so proud of making. Others speculate it was the chief of police who received a promotion right after Legs was killed, and many have believed he received that promotion because he took Legs out. It is thought that it may have been his arch nemesis, Dutch Schultz, who wanted him out of New York City so that he could have free reign over the territory.
Okay.
Legs is now buried at Mount Olivet, O-L-I-V-E-T, Cemetery in Mazpeh, Queens.
Okay.
So, he's in Queens,
not too
guys.
Far away from us.
Nope.
We could go visit his grave. Do you want to do...
I think that's the song that Sarah Bareilles wrote, The Cemetery in the Center of Queens.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a great song.
It is a great song. I love that. I wanted to actually get that song together for auditioning.
Oh, you should.
Maybe I still will.
It's such a good song.
It is a great song. It's a really old city.
Freaking love it.
Totally.
I listen to it often.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so the movie was produced by Warner Brothers Studios, which is important because that's who Peter had to get the rights from in order to write this musical.
Okay.
And it was directed by Bud Boettcher and written by Joseph Landon. The cast included Ray Danton as Jack Legs Diamond, Robert Lowry as Arnold Rothstein, Karen Steele as Alice Scott, Legs' wife, and Warren Oates... as Legs' kid brother, Eddie Diamond. So as I was just complaining about how I didn't like Legs Diamond and there was like nothing redeemable about him in the movie, I read an article that talked about this and said that gangster movies of that era failed to make the characters likable.
Oh, there you go.
So I was like, boom, that's why I hated him. And so within like the first 10 minutes of the movie, I was like, Legs Diamond is putting stolen goods in a woman's purse whom he literally met 5 minutes before. And I was just like screaming at the television and saying he was a jerk. Okay, so that musical theater life. Here we go. The players. Peter Allen. I already talked about him. Harvey Fierstein and Charles Suppan. Charles Suppan was actually a famous like costume designer.
Okay.
So he was Peter Allen's costume designer. Yeah. They had been good friends for a long time. But
he sewed all the rhinestones onto his capes.
And so he wrote the first incarnation of the book, and then Harvey was like brought in to help rework it. But then they felt like it was going in too dark of a direction.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still Harvey and Charles. So Charles Suppan is the first and only librettist to also win a Cody Award for women's wear design. It's freaking awesome.
There you go.
We've got Robert Allen Ackerman was the director. He had directed two plays on Broadway before this, and those plays were The Slab Boys and Bent.
Okay.
And by all accounts, they were pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
But musicals are different.
Completely different. Completely different. David Mitchell was the set designer and Michael Shawn was the choreographer. Okay, previews began for the Legs Diamond musical on October 25th, 1988. So here's your first problem. There were no tryouts.
Oh.
Legs Diamond had no out-of-town tryouts. No. Are you talking about... You thought there was like no audition.
I was like, what did they do? Did they just call around their friends? No, you're talking out-of-town tryouts.
Yeah, out-of-town tryouts. So there was a workshop.
Yeah.
And so they basically just used the same cast from the workshop. Okay. But they didn't have an out-of-town tryout.
For people in our audience, workshops and tryouts are completely different. Workshop is really just like a one-off. Like maybe one or two performances in front of an audience and it's to sort see of how like the material goes.
It's not even like fully staged.
But like a tryout would be a complete... fully performed production where you get real audience members, not just friends and family, like you, real and being able to really figure out whether or not this show works and in what areas where they need to be changed. So for them not to have a tryout is really unprecedented. Yeah, it's really unheard of.
It's not a great idea because it gives the writers and it gives the entire creative team so much more time to work out the kinks before you bring it to Broadway.
It's true.
You know, so even if you're not going to do an out-of-town tryout, a lot of places will at the very least do an off-Broadway.
Yeah.
All right. So previews began October 25th, 1988. As I stated, the first book was darker than they felt was best for the show. And the set that David... So part of the reason that there was no out-of-town tryout was the set that David Mitchell had created apparently was too elaborate to, like, move.
Okay.
So it made a tour impossible.
Okay. I mean...
Right, I know. And I'm just... And I also read that, like, the Nederlander organization, they were just, like, so hot to get something in their theater.
Okay.
Because... this was the Mark Hellinger Theater, which was riddled with problems for whatever reason all during the 80s to actually have like a successful run of a show. Sure. I mean, and this is the theater that had shows like My Fair Lady in it. So originally it had, you know, just hit after hit after hit. But for some reason, and I'm sure economics had a lot to do with it because you had in like 1976... you had a Chorus Line just bringing Broadway back to life. Mm-hmm. And so all through the 80s, it was still basically trying to find its footing.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, the Mark Hellinger was one of those theaters that just could not get a hit to stay inside of it. And so here you have Legs Diamond, and they're just trying to get something in. Also, it was the first... the only new book musical set for the 1989-1990 season.
Okay.
So if you also look to
that's a lot of pressure.
It is. I mean, if you also look to the year that Sunset Boulevard first came out, it was also the only new book musical for that entire season and won the Tony Award for Best New Musical because it
did
it was the only musical.
Yeah.
Like the only other one was a review. So that doesn't have a book.
Yep.
So it just didn't, you know. Wow. So like I said, the 80s and like very, very early 90s were sort of a difficult time.
Mm-hmm. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com.
All right, so here's where, I mean, already we'd had a bumpy start with no out-of-town tryout. The set's too elaborate and bulky, so you can't do one. Then Michael Shawn, the choreographer, is fired and replaced by Alan Johnson because they don't feel like he's getting like the real feel of the show. The show saw several opening night postponements and ended up having, which is unheard of, an 8-week preview cycle. So there was 8 weeks of previews.
Oh my goodness.
There's never, guys.
Ever.
Guys, there's never 8 weeks of previews.
Maybe two.
Maybe.
But even that's pushing it.
Yeah. 8 weeks of previews is
maybe
crazy.
Maybe they were using previews instead of tryouts.
The tryout, right.
Like maybe, but that's just, not, but still.
No, because the thing about a tryout is that usually when you're going to do one, you do multiple.
Right.
And you have weeks in each location and full audiences so that you have plenty of time to work out all of the kinks. It's like if you listen to the Annie episode and when they went back and did Annie Warbucks, they had all that time at the Goodspeed, theater. And so first they went to D.C. It wasn't working in D.C., so they shut the whole thing down, and then they went to Goodspeed and then reworked it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you just need time, because without an audience, you can't figure out, like, what works and what doesn't work.
But, like, once you're on Broadway, like, people expect it to be...
It's ready. It's supposed to be ready.
Fully fleshed out, all kinks gone, you're on Broadway.
That's right. But people... It's New York. We don't mess around. It's not messing around here.
Well, it's a lot of money to spend on something that isn't fully... Like, if I'm going to a tryout in Boston or in Philly, that's what I'm paying for. But if I'm paying for a Broadway ticket, my expectations are going to be much higher.
Right.
My expectations are that you already did your work.
That's right.
And I can sit in the audience and enjoy what I'm about to see.
And then with this being the only new book musical slated for the entire season, it had a lot of buzz and anticipation surrounding it. And so you had a lot of audience members who were, you know, excited to see something new, see something fresh, see something that wasn't a revival. And so when you... You know, when people have that anticipation already in their minds and, you know, you're going and you don't actually know what this show is going to be like, this, it doesn't make it's not a good sign.
No,
it's not a good start.
No.
All right. So unfortunately, during the 8 weeks, there was a lot of bad mouth already.
Yeah. I'm not surprised.
Right. Right. And it has been likened to that of the whole Merrily We Roll Along saga, which Merrily We Roll Along went into previews in 1981 and had to undergo radical changes because of such dismal word of mouth. So they're liking
can
it.
You, I mean, can that. You imagine? I mean, like the 80s, we didn't have social media. Like today, the show would be dead in the water in an hour.
Yeah.
Or Twitter, less.
Facebook, Twitter.
Because that kind of word of mouth, yeah. I mean, ugh.
It goes down fast. So major cast changes occurred to Legs Diamond. So the role of Legs' wife, Alice, which was played by Christine Andreas, was eliminated.
I love her.
Do you?
Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, she's good.
And then Legs' brother, Eddie, played by Bob Stillman, was also eliminated.
Oh, wow.
If you see the movie, Alice and Eddie are integral, to the story. And as I read the synopsis, you know, the short little history of the actual Legs life, like they are very important.
Yes.
As well. So I mean, those cuts were... To me, those cuts show they just didn't...
They were grasping.
Yeah. You know, because...
They were like, oh, I don't know.
We just have to cut somebody. They didn't know what they were doing.
Oh, yikes.
Peter Allen's attempts to play so totally against type as a suave Lothario and his inability to act were... They tried to remedy it with rewrites, adding monologues for him to speak directly to the audience because people were so used to his cabaret
shows.
Yeah,
he's very charming.
Right. So even though that maybe could quell the problem of his inability to be a great actor, it still doesn't help
tell the story.
Well, what it didn't help was his him being a Lothario.
Oh yeah, totally.
I mean,
no, because he probably went right back into that whole
Liberace.
Yeah,
like imagine Liberace on stage trying to woo women. and be a person that women just like fall all over.
Maybe that's why they cut the wife. Maybe they're just, they couldn't create that chemistry.
Well, the thing is, though, they still had all the mistresses. Oh,
yeah, that's true.
So it wasn't even, it was like, okay, so Alice is gone. Alice, the sort of backbone.
Yeah.
But like, we're going to leave all of these other women that he's supposedly... And so, and so that did not work.
No.
So opening night was December 26, 1988. And Frank Rich commented that the evening's most compelling drama was watching Alan figure out what to do with his hands. It opened the day after Christmas and ended up closing February 19th, 1989.
Okay. After how many?
So... if we say it went into previews in October.
Yeah, I'm not good at math.
We're trying to do math again. Y'all figure it out. Preview started October 25th, 1988. It opened December 26th, 1988. And then it closed February 19th, 1989.
Okay.
And if you do like... 8 performances a week, you do the math, you'll figure it out. Okay, yeah. So... I listened to the soundtrack, so if you're at all also interested, I already told you about YouTube, but you can listen to the entire cast recording on Spotify.
What did you think?
I was doing research for Legs Diamond and doing research for Leap of Faith, and we were going to do Bonnie and Clyde this season, but we're pushing it for next season. And so I... was like on the train and I would just be listening to all these recordings on Spotify. Spotify, if anybody from Spotify is listening, bless you for your cast recording.
Thank you very much. Bless you. Yes, yes.
And so I was like, well, it's not as bad as the Leap of Faith recording. Like,
oh dear.
Yeah. It was, you know, there were songs that kind of really got stuck in your head. There were like lines from songs that got stuck in your head. So I wouldn't say that it was, you know, I feel like, I would say a decent musical at least has a song get stuck in your head.
Yeah, that's true.
And Peter Allen's voice and songs were lodged in my brain for weeks after I listened to it. But I was annoyed by the female characters. Like I do feel like I am a feminist in one way.
Sure.
And so I was really frustrated with how, you know, of course they completely lost. The Bechdel test was blown to smithereens. Okay. So that's number one, like just blown to smithereens. Yeah. And so all any woman sang about was how much she was in love with Legs Diamond how messed up he was and like the names they called themselves. I just,
No,
I was unhappy.
Unhappy.
And I get it in terms of the fact that Legs Diamond was a Lothario. Mm-hmm. He was a player. He didn't treat women with respect.
Right.
So, okay. So it stands to reason that, you know, he would not be treating women with respect and the women would be singing about how they were disrespected, but they weren't even singing angrily about being disrespected. So I was like, at least get pissed off.
Right.
Something. I need something, ladies.
Yeah. More than just the doe eyes.
No, I can't. I can't abide.
Well, maybe they used that as a device though, so that the audience had some indication that Legs Diamond was likable. Do you think? I mean, it didn't work one way or the other.
It didn't work at all.
That's too bad.
Okay, so just so you can see just a little bit of why I was upset. There were songs with lyrics like, if you love me, put your knockers away.
I think I'm blushing.
Okay. And then... there's another song called I Was Made for Champagne. So it's one of those girls. Yeah. And she's just singing. I mean, she's basically like this Marilyn Monroe, Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. Mm-hmm. What's another movie? How to Marry a Millionaire. Isn't that?
Is that a movie?
Yeah, Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, yes, I think so, yeah.
Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. Yeah. So I Was Made for Champagne is very much like that.
Okay.
And then the song Only an Older Woman. So that's like...
What is she, 30?
Right. So fresh. She's like this older woman who's just like lamenting about how much she loves legs, and only a woman of her age could really understand and love him the way that he would need to be. But like, he doesn't care about anyone. So yeah. Just really frustrating to listen to. So after the failure was so total.
Mm-hmm.
It compelled the Nederlander organization to sell the Mark Hellinger Theater. And so Times Square Church had already been...
Wait, based on that show?
That was like the last show they did, because it was just a series of total failures.
So that was just the final...
Yeah, this was the final nail in the coffin. So Times Square Church had already been renting the Nederlander Theater, which is still in use now. War Paint is there now. They had been renting it for their Sunday services. And so they already had this relationship with the Nederlander organization. So they entered into a, I think it was, it's a funny lease. It's like a 100-year lease or a 1,000-year lease, like something really funny like that, with the Nederlander organization for the Mark Hellinger Theater. And they've kept it in really excellent condition.
It's beautiful. Have you been there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they also allow you to take tours. So if you're not a churchgoer like Pamela and I are, who've actually been there for services.
For service. Yeah, it's really neat.
You can just take a tour of it. And it's beautiful.
And I think, I mean, it's a large theater. It's like a 3,000-seat theater. Yeah. It's a very large theater. And they pack that thing.
They do.
And they have an
overflow.
For
multiple services.
Yeah. It's really incredible.
Yeah. So, you know what? It's like, I am glad that the theater is still in beautiful condition and is still, you know, this church. I love it because this church has said... We also, like, we see the value of theater.
Yeah.
Like, so we are going to keep this theater in good condition, and we're going to recognize that there's a beautiful history there, and
absolutely.
We will still allow people to come in and to partake and to see, like, where theater history was made. And we're also going to, you know, worship God. So that's what happened to the Mark Hellinger Theater. The sets and costumes... were basically thrown into the Hudson River.
Oh my God. Like a dead body.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was like.
It's kind of a fitting end, though, if I you guess, really think
right?
about it.
It's like, it really is.
Did they tie the clothing and sets to like cinder blocks?
I know. And just let them sink? I know, right? It's the weirdest thing. Like, that I read that weird. And I was like, are you kidding me? But no, they just.
Wait, what?
Yeah. They were just like all trashed. And so they're like, they're in a landfill, the bottom of the Hudson River.
You know, because Kelly, I think Kelly was one of the shows, too, that we have done on this podcast.
Yeah.
That the sets and costumes all ended at the landfill as well.
Maybe I'm getting them confused.
But it wasn't the Hudson River, though. There was no Hudson River involved.
If I'm wrong, I will be back on one of the
minisodes
to say that. But. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were all destroyed.
Yeah.
Not only that, but it's very difficult to find the orchestrations.
Oh.
In 2012, yeah, it just said Legs Diamond got a reading in December of 2012, but they did have difficulty finding the orchestrations. So they had to basically create them from what they heard.
From listening. Oh,
yeah,
wow.
So that they could do
well,
the
wait,
reading.
Though, because, I mean, I'm assuming that they got the rights to perform it.
Right.
So why would the orchestrations just weren't available?
Yeah, no.
That's
like,
weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, it's like they can't find them. Like, they contacted the Peter Allen Estate.
Yeah.
And they could not get the orchestrations. Huh. So it's just one of those weird things. It really sounds like for him this was such a dismal failure and just was so
he just wanted
disheartening.
To delete it completely.
Just like pretend it didn't happen. A bunch of the songs were used in The Boy from Oz, though.
Okay.
So final note, and this is like a weird, weird foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Like really creepy foreshadowing. So the beginning of the second act in the Legs Diamond musical. So creepy, you guys. I'm just. Legs Diamond is dancing on his coffin. And he said, he sings, "I'm in showbiz. Only a critic can kill me."
Well,
that's what happened.
That is what happened for the show.
That's what happened.
Yikes.
And it really did kill his Broadway career. Like yeah. there was no more Broadway.
Coming back from that.
So that's the story of Legs Diamond, the musical. Wow. Guys.
That is a good story. I mean, I think it's always sad when.
Yeah.
When someone's dream dies.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Peter Allen had a terrible career. You know, he was known for his flamboyance and for his fire and his energy.
And his charisma.
And his charisma.
Ability to talk to the audience.
He was not known as a Lothario.
Yeah.
So it's like, play to your strengths.
Right?
And like, know your audience, which I've said so many times mm-hmm. on this podcast, is people not understanding and owning who they are. And so when you don't own who you are and, you know, play to your strengths, mm-hmm. you know, you're going to lose.
Yeah. I don't want people to leave thinking that we want you to stay in your own little box, that you shouldn't, you know, branch out and try something that you want to do that's different from what you're used to. Mm-hmm. But when you try something new, you can't expect to just dive into the deep end and have success. Right. You really do have to have an idea of what you're doing and how to do it. And you need to surround yourself with people that have that kind of experience. Right. Otherwise, you don't have a foundation that's strong enough to really compete. So I want to remind everybody to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes when you listen to this podcast. Tell your friends about us. If you would like to, you can also like, share, and follow on Facebook at Theater Geeks Anonymous.
You can follow us on Twitter at TGA.
B-way! TGABway@gmail.com if you've got any questions or comments, or if you've got any stories, we want to hear them. We can
absolutely
do a little intermission sode.
Yeah. We need you to send us any questions about these episodes that you have. We mm-hmm. need, if there's any corrections and omissions.
Totally.
If you know any of the answers to the
you
questions.
Have any juicy gossip?
If you can do math, we'll take that.
That's a big one. We might need to hire someone to do math for us. I really just hope that you'll stick with us.
Yeah.
Because we like to tell it for the stories, and the mm-hmm. story is there. So if you like hearing stories about theater, about flops, about new works, about, you know, that kind of interesting information backstage, stick with us. Yeah. We will get better as far as the technology and sound quality is concerned. But yeah, tell your friends about us too. Because even if they aren't fully knowledgeable on musicals, they'll like it anyway.
Right. It's okay.
And they'll gain that knowledge because we're going to let them know.
All right, guys.
All right. And scene.
Bye.
Bye.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.